come join the conversation. The show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter. Weekly we share discussions. WWSD, interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning. Yeah, they coming through. Actors and comedians too. Directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes. Tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need. WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. We are sponsored by Collector's Mates. You can check them out at collectorsmates.com for all things related to Phantom. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy, Seamus. How's it going, Seamus?
It's going awesome, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Well, who do we have on tonight?
Oh, man, Seamus, tonight we got a really special guest, someone we've been waiting to interview for, feels like months, if not closer to a year. We are joined by actor, producer, screenwriter, Corin Nemec. Corin has appeared in such shows as Parker Lewis Can't Lose, Supernatural, The Stand, and Stargate SG-1. Corin, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast tonight, man.
It's a pleasure to be here, and sorry that I'm outdoors with some traffic passing by in the background. Those are highly paid stunt drivers, by the way.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot for coming on.
Yeah, so I'm up in Flint, Michigan, working on a film right now, and I'm outside of it talking to you chaps right now.
So what film are you working on currently?
The current film is called Half Dead Fred, and it's about a medium detective, a detective who can speak with the ghosts of lives past and help solve crimes in the present time. It's kind of like a cross between Chinatown and 13 Ghosts.
Okay. Is it serious or more comedy?
It's a bit of both, to be honest. Okay. I mean, you know, the more important, darker, intimate moments are played exactly how they should be. And then the other ones are a bit more Peter Sellers.
Okay. Like rated R, or like we're looking like PG-13?
Well, you know, unfortunately, because of a couple of F-bombs here and there, it will likely be thrown into an R category. I took out all my F-bombs, by the way, because, you know, I'm respectful to the PG-13 crowd. And plus, the movie itself really is PG-13, to be honest. But because of a few F-bombs by some of the characters, they'll shuffle it into the other category. I don't know what 13-year-old on planet Earth today has not heard an F-bomb or two in right. his own home over dinner. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
All right. So what part are you playing in the movie?
I'm playing Fred. Fred is the detective who can talk to ghosts. And he has a troubled and dark past, which is kind of like there's an element to this. It's kind of like The Sixth Sense.
Okay.
There's an underlying storyline that I'm not going to talk about that it could be a wow factor. You know, we'll see how it plays out, but it will definitely be a factor in the viewing of it where you're going, whoa, I had no idea that was happening this whole time. But at the same time, I kind of knew it was happening the whole time. So there is that element to it, but it is kind of a Gumshoe Diaries detective type thing with ghosts, which I'm very excited about. So I love that whole genre, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And how far in filming are you right now?
We're about 3 weeks deep. We have about another week left to go. We've been filming for quite a while now. Bron Theron is the director of it. He's a good buddy of mine. Actually, we know each other really from the graffiti art scene. I've been a graffiti artist since I was about 10 years old. And have the privilege of painting all over the world. So we met because of the graffiti art scene. And then I found out that he was, I'm doing a podcast. And, vote Joe Schiaponi, Fifth Ward.
Hello.
Ward, Joe Schiaponi, Council in Flint, Michigan. Great guy. He's actually also one of the local producers on Half Dead Fred and runs a public arts project, which is a foundation that painting murals all over downtown Flint. Big, huge, gigantic, whole wall-sized murals and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah. You know, beautifying it and giving a different reason for tourism, you know. Yeah, Half Dead Fred's going great. Got a great group of people involved. A wonderful murder mystery. And my buddy Bron Theron is doing a fantastic job. He's the writer-director on it. Jordan Michaels is my co-star in it. He's a child actor like myself. Fantastic actor. You know, we have this Cato and the Hornet kind of relationship in it.
That's cool.
Which is hilarious. Yeah, he has like almost like maybe 10 lines of dialogue in the entire film. And the rest of it is just all, which is a pain for me. My dialogue comes off his reactions. Oh my God, I have another half page speech to do and you say nothing.
So is there anything in particular with this character that you're excited to explore as opposed to some things you've done in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. I I'd say the most similar character I played that's close to Fred Nash, the character from a sci-fi comedy I did called Sand Sharks that I also produced as well. And it's kind of like overconfident, you know, too sure of himself with a tragic past kind of character. And there's brevity to the whole entire film, which is really along the lines of, honestly, I really think it's kind of like old Chevy Chase from like 1980s Chevy Chase or Peter Sellers from like, you know, the 60s. Really classic, well thought out comedic moments that kind of like take a bit of time to get to, you know. And same with the horror film moments. I have to say, it's like a lot of it reminds me of Rosemary's Baby in a way.
Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned you've been doing graffiti art since you were 10. So you got into that before you got into acting then?
Yes, right? Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Were you doing it like legally or was it a tagging kind of thing?
Oh.
What's the statute of limitation on graffiti art?
No, it was completely illegal. Actually, I made the LA Times back in the 80s for my shenanigans.
Oh, nice.
I won't tell the whole story, but but yeah, me and a buddy of mine, Dapper, we made the LA Times. And then I got into a crew called TCF, The Chosen Few, back in 1987. And that crew still lasts to this day. And it's more become like more of an art collective. So we have about 89 plus members worldwide, all different countries, all over the world. Dental artists, street artists, sticker artists, graffiti artists. You know, we opened up to the whole shebang. A lot of things with the graffiti art crews from the old school that I'm from is that they don't want anything that's going to dilute the idea of like what it is to be in a graffiti crew. You know, you're graffiti. That's it. That's all you do. You know, but then again, I always see the same crews. They have stickers up. You know, some of them have weed paste artists. Some of them are doing other things, but you know, they hadn't fully embraced it yet. So we were like one of the first LA, old school LA crews that was founded back in 1986 and really embraced this universal theme of street art, you know. And so now I travel over the world and I go to, you know, I've been to Australia over 20 times, all over Europe. We have members all over in different countries. And when I land on the ground, you know, it's all set up. It's like being involved in a secret society or something. You know,
it sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It's a blast. I've painted in, I mean, Israel, Belgium, Germany, France, Spain, Italy, all over the U.S., every major city in Australia, New Zealand. It just goes on and on. It's an amazing kind of a hobby to have.
Does someone commission these pieces to be made? Well,
I commission myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of stuff I do is not exact sanctioned, you know, but I switched over to doing more stencil art and wheat paste art because it's a softer crime, as they say.
All right. Have you been arrested for any of this?
When I was a teenager, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I learned my lesson. I became much more sneaky.
Learned not to get caught.
Well, you know. Yeah.
Other than yourself, do you have any favorite graffiti artists that are coming up right now?
That are coming up. I mean, Smile, my buddy from my crew. He's over in Copenhagen. Let's see, Wonderlust. He's out of Australia. Sin Canvas is from Seattle. Dr. Nothing. We have a huge amount of crew in San Diego. As far as guys that I love, as far as murals go. I just got to hang out with this Argentinian artist here in Flint because they have a great mural project, like I talked about. His name is Cobre, C-O-B-R-E. This guy is incredible. He does like the kind of murals that are like, you know, 10 stories high and stuff. I can't even figure out how he does it.
Oh, wow.
But amazing guy. What's so cool is like now when I go to Argentina, I'm going to have walls galore. It's amazing. I love it.
Oh, that is cool, man.
Outside of that, you know, me and Jason London, who was here earlier, I don't know where he went. Maybe he'll pop in. But we just shot a TV pilot called Blackwater Blues, which we both created. I wrote the script for.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
And we shot it down in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. And it's also a murder mystery, but it's about the Dixie Mafia and the Deep South kind of, you know, corruption and all the stuff going on there. Basically, the storyline is our mother was the bookkeeper for the Dixie Mob. And she disappeared when we were in our late 20s, early 30s. We went on a hellbent razor to like try and find out what happened to her. Both got thrown in jail for almost 10 years. We get out. Our grandfather dies. He leaves us a list of clues about our mother's disappearance. And then the investigation begins. It's like Redneck Simon and Simon.
Okay.
So yeah, we just finished it. It's in post production now. We're wrapping that up. We'll take it out and sell it.
Cool.
Is it a mini series or is it like a set up for multiple seasons?
No. We have the full 10 episodes for the first season written because you know nobody does 26 episodes anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So we're doing it for like a Netflix, Amazon, Apple, that kind of thing, and we're doing 26 minutes is the average runtime for a show with commercials. So it'll be about a half hour. That's what's exciting is like doing like kind of like a dramedy with a half hour. The people who don't have a lot of attention span, the short attention span theater crowd.
That sounds cool. Look forward to that.
Yeah. Is it easier like creating pilots now with like all the big streaming services that are available between like Netflix and Apple, like you're saying?
Well, you know, it depends really because you don't know what kind of deal you're going to get or if you sell to a different distribution company that then sells to them, you're doubly screwed, you know?
You wouldn't make much on that after everything.
Well, we might. It just depends on the deal. That's all.
I got you. Okay.
Do you have a preferred streaming service you'd like to partner up with on this in particular or doesn't really matter?
I mean, obviously something like a Netflix or someone like that would be the most obvious choice, you know, because they pay big money on the front end.
Okay.
They buy out things for international, you know. So, you know, other ones you might have to do a lot more negotiating with and really squeeze things. There's a lot of platforms right now. There's a lot of content needed. And, you know, fortunately we have the content.
Yeah.
Totally.
Awesome. We look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, for sure.
But actually, the acting itself, though, how did you get started back? I know you started very young and you kind of had like a family full of creative people. How did the acting start?
Really, it started a kid in my graphic arts class in eighth grade in Los Angeles named David Van Gorder. Wow. Famous at that time for playing the nerd Waldo in the music video Hot for Teacher by Van Halen. He was in an acting class called Center Stage LA, directed by Kevin McDermott. And it turned out one of the most important and impactful children's theater companies in Los Angeles, oddly enough. So within 6 to 8 months, I was signed with an agent, auditioning and working. It worked out awesome.
So you've been doing stuff ever since?
Yeah, fortunately. Thank God. There's Jason. Like literally, he just got in town. I dragged him to this podcast. And
what's up, Jason?
I know. it's kind of like, you know, everything's a little chaotic right now with independent filmmaking, but we're making it happen.
It sounds like awesome. It's good. Yeah. It's good to hear.
So after like once you started acting and all, like when did you like fully develop, like get into the craft, like where you just fully committed to it?
Well, I mean, I'd say right away, really. Okay. You know, once I started the acting class, I knew immediately that it was something that was very organic to me and I felt comfortable with. And then once I got on set and all that, I mean, I feel more at home on set than I do almost anywhere else in life, to be honest, you know?
Oh yeah. It's cool that you found something that
yeah, it's rad.
You enjoy that much.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Like you guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've portrayed serial killers a couple times. What was it like to portray something so evil?
Well, I have to say that most of them are fun. Like playing Richard Speck, for instance, was a blast because he was insane. Playing Ted Bundy was absolutely miserable. I mean, the guy was such a creep and I felt dirty every time I got home from work. I was like, but otherwise, generally speaking, it's more of a creationary type of situation where it doesn't matter, you know, what character I'm playing. That's the reality. And that's what I have to believe in.
Right.
Whether I agree with it or not. But I never had any problem except for Ted Bundy. That was the only one that I went home with and was like, "Ew, disgusting."
Yeah, but I've always wondered that, like if you take on characteristics of the people you play, like if it's hard to kind of purify yourself from that.
Yeah, it just depends on if you're a method actor or you're doing something else. You know, I'm not a method actor, so.
So we watched a few of the interviews you did on the Love America tour. Could you talk about that for a little bit? The experiences doing that?
Oh sure, yeah. That that was something that I realized during the height of the whole COVID thing and all that there was a lot of like misrepresentation of what people are like really in this country and the hardworking people and people who are just trying to pay their bills and get along in life and all that. And I just felt like everything I saw was somebody's misrepresentation of what real life is like. So me and a couple of buddies just set out during the height of the whole thing, went to 17 cities, 68 interviews, maybe like seven or so different states, and just interviewed people about like, what was it like, where were they born? How did they get to where they are today? How did they survive? What do they do to pay their bills? Like real average, normal questions, you know? And I think that's why it maybe was underrepresented in some respects on the internet, because it wasn't like flamboyant.
Right.
You know, but that was the main point, was just to, you know, introduce people to this opposite of what was being spoon fed to us by the media, that like, no, none of us are like that. We're all the same. We're all trying to get by. It doesn't matter, you know, and it was a fantastic experience. You know, I'd like to do it again, but with a bigger budget.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be
cool. Yeah, totally.
Was there anyone you met or any stories that you found on that journey that were particularly memorable?
Oh man, every single one. I mean, the main thing about the journey was really that everybody's gone through something that's similar to get where they are today, you know.
Gotcha. So when you were on Stargate SG-1, you kind of replaced a pretty big character, Daniel Jackson, portrayed by Michael Shanks. What was that stepping into those shoes?
Well, I mean, I didn't really care, you know. I mean, I'm just thankful to have a job. It's what I do for a living. But Michael Shanks is a great guy. We had a great time working together. I think that for me, it was just an opportunity to, you know, get a leg up.
You still are there still active members of the OJB running around?
Oh man, the OJB! Wow, look at you, man. That's a you are a well informed man. I don't think so. I think most of them are probably married and have their own bananas to tend to, besides Jonas's.
Gotcha. So you've mentioned too that writing is one of your almost a bigger passion for you than acting.
Well, sometimes, not really. I mean, I much prefer doing what it is that I enjoy doing most, which has always been acting. But you know, if I could pay and get by and do my thing and just write, but no, I would certainly just write for a living if that's what was presented to me.
Are there any dream franchises that you haven't gotten to work on yet that you'd like to be a part of?
You know, not really. I mean, unless they do a remake of Greatest American Hero and let me play the lead, I know I'm good.
All right.
So when we're looking into your background, we did see the issue with the Poseidon Rex and your recovery. Do you mind going into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it was a long journey back to normalcy. Ultimately, you know, there was not the production's fault. It was the fault of the Belizean Coast Guard, unfortunately. But anyway, there was a bad accident. I got injured. I shattered my femur and went through, you know, five surgeries and a year and a half or so of rehabilitation. And it was a bit of a nightmare. But, you know, fortunately, production had enough insurance to cover the all of that stuff. So, you know, I'm pretty much back to 100%. I mean, there's, okay, you know, there's not much I can't do anymore. In fact, I think my right leg might be even more limber than my left.
So like, what was the recovery like though? Was it just a lot of physical therapy and stuff like that, or?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a lot of surgeries and yes, a lot of physical therapy. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Everything anybody who's been to physical therapy can imagine.
And did they give you like any odds of like being able to walk again or being 100%? Did they give you pretty good odds?
Yeah. I mean, my odds were always really good because I didn't have to shorten the length of my femur. You know, with the break that happened was so severe that there was a chance that I could have lost length in my femur, which would have put my right leg like a half an inch or a quarter inch shorter than the rest of my body, which, you know, would have been frightening. So because that didn't happen, because, you know, they did enough surgeries, because what was on the up and up with the production company and the surgeries and all that, you know, I was able to walk away essentially. You know, like I was before I walked into the whole project.
Gotcha.
Thank God.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You used to be a hip hop artist for a little bit as well, right?
Yeah. I recorded an entire, I have one song that me and David Arquette did with Balthazar Getty. We had a band together in the 80s called 13th Floor. And me and David were the rappers and Vault was the producer. And we have one that I have on my SoundCloud called The Madness that we recorded on like, you know, a four track, you know, it was a poor recording, but I did recently find a number of old recordings I did, and the original demo tape we did for the band called Starship of Fools, which myself, Shane Mooney, who's Paul Mooney's son, the famous comedian Paul Mooney, Shane Mooney was his son.
Oh, cool.
He was also in the band, a guy named Patah, who was his cousin, Malik, who was Patah's cousin. Balthazar was our producer, and we had some other guest stars and stuff like that who came on for different tracks. But we ended up getting a deal with Motown. We recorded an entire album, and our rep at Motown in New York got in a horrible car wreck and was unable to come back to work, and our album got shelved. Oh, but it was called Starship of Fools, Lost in the Year 2000, which is far gone from now. But I did find a demo tape recently that I'm looking to get digitized so I can at least put out some of the original tracks, because they're pretty far out. We did this before Farside did their first album, so it's kind of a similar vein.
I got you. It sucks it never got released.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And who owns the rights to the music? Do you still own the rights, or is
we do. I do. I own all the rights.
Okay.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, the rights reverted back to us once the album didn't come out. All rights reverted back to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any plans for a reunion tour?
If we can ever get the original tracks released, I suppose so.
Yeah. I'd love to hear them.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. There'll be something out there eventually.
Cool.
That's awesome. Who was the hardest character you had to portray, though, in acting?
Probably Ted Bundy. I mean, honestly, I was just so sick of being that guy. I really was like over it. You know, by day three, I was like, ugh. I've never had a problem playing any other character besides that, to be honest.
So that was the only one that kind of got like inside. Like the other ones, you could kind of put it away.
Yeah, definitely.
I've heard of actors like, because you're always like, you're always kind of in your own emotions and everything. Do you ever kind of forget who you are or anything like that? Or is that just kind of like,
preferably. I mean, you know, there's something about letting go of everything you have to worry about and be concerned with, and become somebody totally different that has nothing to do with you. And because those burdens and concerns of the character are fictional, so you don't have to go home with them. It's quite a relief to play a different character than yourself sometimes.
That makes sense. As far as the whole filming process, what's your favorite part about acting in a film? It's the thing you enjoy most.
I would say that my favorite part is really the process of seeing the beginning, middle, and end of a scene, you know, and how they shoot and how they put it together and all that. I mean, it's different than theater for many reasons, but for me, I think that it's about all the different bits and pieces and parts to the puzzle that all come together, from the lighting and the grip department and the camera team and everybody else, you know, that it all folds together into this kind of cohesive piece of art that you can track with, that tells a story that can make you, you know, be engulfed in the whole delusion of it.
Okay.
So you do a lot of different creative stuff. You do graffiti art, you do acting, you do writing, producing, directing, hip-hop music. Is it hard like to kind of just like focus on one at a time, or are you just like constantly, oh, I want to do this now I want to do this?
No, not really. I mean, being in the arts and entertainment business, it affords a little bit of elbow room on the side to enjoy different hobbies and interests. If you can manifest those hobbies and interests into a secondary career, that's a huge plus.
Yeah.
You know, I always try and put my bread and butter in front of me. And then from that point on, like try and introduce other things I'm interested in that could possibly also generate income behind that. I have to focus on the main thing first and then go from there.
Gotcha. And is there anything you have like just turned down because you're too busy like working on like that main thing, like something you really regret not doing?
I'm sure there was a few, but over the years, I've been fortunate enough to land some really great gigs. I don't know if there's anything specific that I turned down that I can say right offhand, but I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is.
Is there anything that you don't have to name it, but is there anything that you said yes to that you've regretted?
Oh, a thousand things. Raging sharks, sand sharks, robocroc, mansquito, SS Doomkeeper, dragon wasps. No.
All the sci-fi movies, huh?
Yeah. No. I always enjoy any performance I do, to be honest. You know, I figure if I can deliver something that adds to the quality of a film that is already kind of cheesy, then I've done my job.
Gotcha.
What character of yours do you get recognized the most for?
Probably Jonas Quinn from Stargate SG-1. Nowadays, in the U.S. anyway. Over in Europe, it's for sure Parker Lewis.
Okay.
When did you change your name, your stage name from Corky?
Well, as soon as I was old enough.
Was that your own decision?
It was a nickname my grandmother gave me when I was a child, and kind of stuck growing up. I really wasn't that into it, but playing an actor in Hollywood, agents were like, "Oh, Corky is adorable." I'm like, "Meh." I'm not trying to be adorable, but yeah. So Corin is the name my mom always wanted to name me, and that's the one that has worked the best. I like it, and you know, it serves its purpose.
So do you enjoy directing as well?
I do. Not as much as I enjoy writing, producing, and acting, but there's a lot more intricacies involved in directing that can be tiresome at times. I have directed, went off without a hitch. I had a great time. It's been great. I mean, I don't mind doing either one or the other.
Yeah. So just one last question. Is there anything that you wish you would have known when you were starting out, or that you would tell like a starting actor? Any advice you would give?
Absolutely. Get an escrow account. Don't trust a businessman.
All right.
That is the key thing, man. Just put your money in escrow and let it sit there. Get a trust fund. Don't touch it. Don't do anything with it. Just let it sit there. Don't let your parents touch it. Don't let anybody touch it. Don't sign over a power of attorney to somebody you don't know. Don't do any of that stuff. It will come back to haunt you.
All right.
We really appreciate it, Corin.
It's been a blast. We appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, you know, let's do a follow-up, yeah. You know, closer to when Half Dead Fred is done.
Yeah, and, definitely.
Got my email, my phone number, and all that. So, and we'll stay in touch. We'll stay in touch up until like something happens with Blackwater Blues with Jason London and I, or this, you know, with the other team we got involved. So,
yeah,
definitely. We'll definitely do that.
Corin, have a great night. We really appreciate you talking to us. You're the best.
All right. Thanks all a lot.
Have a good one, man.
Cheers, fellas.
All right, later.
Have a great night.
You too. Oh man, he is so cool. He just does everything. It's awesome.
Yeah, that was cool, man.
Yeah,
that was cool.
I don't know where he finds the time for everything. That's the cool thing. Like, there's like super, super creative people. Like, they do everything. Like, Greg Zajac was like that, where he's just like, and I dropped like a fish album or something, and it's just like
that was cool. Just that's the first time we had just like another celebrity in the like next to when he answered the call. He's like, oh, here's, you know, Mr. London there. So yeah, that was cool.
That's very funny. I don't know if we got that on the record. I don't think I was recording yet at the time.
We got one. Yeah, we didn't get that. We got him when he was in the car, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, no.
That was interesting.
He's a really sweet guy and all. Yeah, he's a lot of passion.
Yeah, I appreciate it. He was real busy. Yeah. I'm appreciating him coming on.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like he felt a little guilty, unfortunately. And I really don't want him to feel guilty. I even don't feel guilty, dude. Like, it's even getting the opportunity just to talk to you for a few minutes is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Corin, though. I'm really excited to hit him up after his movie gets closer to wrap up and all.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Definitely hear the ins and outs of it.
I'm looking forward to hearing his long lost hip hop album. It'll be fun.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
How's it going? I'm glad it's finally happened.
It's going good, man. It's going good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry about that, guys. I was doing another podcast here at some studio here in Flint.
Okay.
And for a Half Dead Fred. and you know, I can't record inside because obviously they're recording somebody else right now.
Right.
So we're out here on the streets, buddy.
I like it.
On the street, like derelicts. Awesome.
Play by ear, but let's go okay. for it, man.
All right, cool. So
I cannot deny beers like this.
Is there anything you can't talk about, like NDAs that you're under that you just they're off limits?
No. Except my work with the CIA. Other than that, we're fine.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you're joking or not. I can't tell.
Well, believe me, I'm definitely joking.